Oh, it's hot. It's hot in here.
I love the heat.
Scorcher.
I love the heat.
Yeah?
You love the heat?
Yes.
Do you like being sticky and
man
hot?
In his natural habitat. Every time it's hot outside, I get out, I look up at the sun, I'm like, oh, it's a beautiful day. Some people like run from their car, air-conditioned cars to air-conditioned homes, you know?
Yeah.
I sit out like a lizard.
Soak it.
Barely moving, soak it barely up. Moving my eyes with a cursory blink. What are we talking about?
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed. Call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and white-collar convict, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, Big Tuna.
And you know, with us as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
A boss is like a teacher, and I am like the cool teacher.
Mr. Handel.
Mr. Handel. Mr. Handel would hang out with us, and he would tell us awesome jokes.
We're doing
jokes.
A long one.
Good. And he actually hooked up with one of the students. And then like 12 other kids came forward and sent all the papers.
Wow.
Really ruined eighth grade for us.
Oh, gosh. Every week we discuss a topic about our favorite show, NBC's The Office, the American version. And this week we're going to do season 3.
Our favorite comedy or right? favorite show? Is this your favorite TV show?
I don't know. I say that every week. Is it your favorite? I would say it's my favorite. I'd say it's...
Your favorite show.
It is above all other shows. Like, you can't rank it.
So it's your favorite show.
Yeah, you can't rank it with the other shows because you watch it so much. I've seen the whole show 25 times. How many times do you think you've watched The Office?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But yes, it is my favorite show.
I mean, it's the only show I have a podcast about. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, same. I guess it's my favorite show, too. All right. Well, glad we figured that out. Thanks.
So we've already done a season 1. We've already done a season 2. We're doing season 3. We're working our way
It's the natural
up.
Progression of things.
Yes. Season 3 aired from September 21st, 2006 to May 17th, 2007.
What a time.
The Office was hot in season 3. This was a big deal. Critically acclaimed. Season 3 was renewed before season 2 was over. They renewed it after The Carpet, episode 14. And then it went on for another 8 episodes after that. That's very early to renew a show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just in general, following this trajectory where we recap individual seasons, I think season 3 is a pretty exciting one for us to get into because it is so critically acclaimed and widely loved with a lot of signature moments, a lot of key episodes. So excited to dig into it.
Yes. Me too. It's one of my favorites.
Also, big, probably the season I've seen the most on DVD, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of DVD watches at this one because it was one of the first, like the full, it's 25 episodes. It's like, again, top to bottom. I was thinking about this earlier that if you could take like one season and pull it out of The Office and it would feel like the most complete season of TV, it would be season 3.
That's a good point because what it is about this season is it starts with The Office being split up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we introduce a couple new characters who are fantastic. Of course, Andy Bernard's appears in this season. Mm-hmm. Rashida Jones.
Tony.
Karen Filippelli. Please leave me the message. Filipelli.
Hannah.
Hannah Smotrich Barr. Martin Nash.
Tony.
Tony Gardner. Pepperoni Tony.
and then the merger episode where they all come together. I think season two starts where the main issues are kind of all about the company. There's going to be downsizing. They're going to close a branch. And then it ends with a lot of kind of more relationship issues.
That's a really good point. I think the idea that the show pivots from focusing on the overarching what's going on with the company and what's going on with the branch to what's going on with the characters, I think that facilitates better storytelling, right? It facilitates more character growth, development, and that's what we as viewers are really more invested in. Before we move too quickly into the season, I love the idea that you brought out with it begins with the office sort of split up in two different locations, right?
Right.
Scranton and Stanford. There's a storytelling sort of trope called En Media Res. Yeah.
I was going to say that.
Wait, what did you say?
It's called En Media Res.
En
Media Res.
In the middle of things.
In the middle of things. It's a Latin term for in the middle of things. Okay. So a couple of good examples. If you think back to the Odyssey, right?
Yes. The Odyssey. Very familiar. But just give me a recap.
For sure.
Think back.
So
yes,
the
yes,
Odyssey
yes.
following the Trojan War, which is the Iliad, right? Mm-hmm. And the Odyssey is Homer's recounting of the journey home by Odysseus, right? And basically it begins with him on the island of the Harpies, I want to say, or the Sirens.
Mm.
But anyway, it begins with him, like the war is over and they're journeying home and all these big events in the story have already happened, right? A better example, or at least a more modern example, is Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. So when Game of Thrones begins in the first book, Robert's Rebellion is over. The big war to unseat the Targaryens and defeat
Harry
the
Potter.
Mad King. Sure. All of that is I agree with you. But
just wanted to slip it in there.
But basically the events of Game of Thrones begin after this big war has taken place. So great stories often begin in the middle of things.
Mm. And another example, of course, is in The Office. We've got Pam has called off her wedding, and I think that that's such an incredible way to start this season. The pieces are moving in the right direction, but not. Pam calls off her wedding with Roy. That's an opportunity for Jim and Pam to get it together. But Jim is now moved to Stanford.
Right.
So how are they going to get together now?
Yeah.
Right? Let's see. Do you want to dive right in? Are we going to go by episode? How do you want to
I think,
it?
Yeah, let's just go over the major. I think we should go over the major beats of the season.
Right.
And then go into maybe signature moments or things that stand out from the season. So we can go episode by episode, or we can go kind of moment by moment or
it
theme by
theme. It starts with a bang. Gay witch hunt.
Yeah.
Of course, Michael discovers that, that Oscar's gay, the human resources, Toby tells him that,
how dare you?
I almost forgot. I was going to say Tony, cause we were talking about pepperoni Tony.
Pepperoni hey. Toby.
Toby tells him, which by the way, I don't know if like he's being reprimanded for calling Oscar gay. For not liking Die Hard.
Right. For preferring, what is it, Romeo and Juliet or Shakespeare in Love?
Oh, yeah, Shakespeare in Love.
To Die Hard.
Yes.
An action movie.
Yes.
Not just an action movie, Toby, but Die Hard. It begins with Toby kind of explaining to Michael why he's there, what like kind of has transpired.
Toby, was that a good idea to tell Michael that he's actually gay? Did you think he had to?
I mean, you have to. I think, you know, as the manager, you should know. And I think the idea is that Michael will be able to hand that with a little bit more tact or grace, you know?
Right.
But instead, Michael goes to Oscar and he's like, you got to forgive me. I've been calling people faggy since I was in junior high.
Yeah. You don't call retarded people retarded, right? You call your friends retarded when they're acting retarded.
Yeah.
Michael gets reprimanded by Jan. This is a great Jan reprimanding Michael moment because he's just still making cracking jokes about it and stuff like that.
Another thread through this whole season, the Michael and Jan is fantastic. Right?
Oh yeah. They are not together at this point, right?
They kind of come together in the middle of the season.
That's right.
But yeah, but basically
is he with Carol already at this moment?
Yeah, he's with Carol.
Yeah, that's right.
But basically the episode plays out where Michael is kind of giving Oscar moments to kind of come out publicly. They go into the conference room.
Yeah.
He has Dwight do some research, right? All of it is very misguided and very awkward. And I think actually at the time that this episode came out, it was kind of praised for the way that it kind of handled this topic, you know? Mm. Obviously, like, it's pretty terrible the way that Michael does it, but, like, in a way, like, it's at least, I think, praise at least for the way that it's kind of addressed.
He represents like a childish, just complete childish ignorance of what homosexuality even means or is. He just has a schoolyard approach to it. And so they do a good job of like taking that mentality and playing with it.
There's another moment, like Edwin always says, you know, there's these moments where people are speaking to the audience. I think that's when Jan is reprimanding Michael. She's saying, this is completely inappropriate. Don't you understand that you've outed Oscar?
Right.
This is a huge deal in the gay community. And so that's her kind of saying, like, guys, this is, like, everything that's happening here is wrong.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, the way that Michael goes about it is terribly misguided. But what we actually see from the show as a whole is portraying kind of how serious and how impactful that kind of thing can be. And Oscar says to the larger group, like, this is the most terrible, most backward day of my life. This is a part of my life I wasn't expecting to share with you today. Mm-hmm. But here we are. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me personally, I watched this.
Life is sex.
I watched this episode with all of my friends on TV the night it aired. Do you guys remember that? Did you do that?
Yeah, I watched. I also remember watching. You were there. I'm sure. Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't actually think I watched the season live on TV.
Yeah.
Well, you said it was from 2006.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Through. Yeah, I didn't. I had no access to a TV at that time. Yeah. I think I only started watching it weekly. Season four.
One thing that I read about
TV.
This episode is that the kiss was improvised. There are several scenes of them kind of embracing and coming together. Mm. And in the end, you know, there's a recap from Oscar Martinez, the actor's name, where he's like, I see Steve Carell like so close to me, and I think, oh my God, he's going to plant one on me.
Yeah.
You know. But yes, the kiss itself is improvised.
That's amazing. Yeah. I feel like,
and it feels that way.
That look on his face really is like, is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? I forgot too that Dwight goes in for a kiss after that.
Yeah, that's such a funny, like a perfectly, if you watch the bloopers, sometimes you can see moments that are improvised that actually make it into the show that are really laughed at. I'm thinking of season 7 when Michael spanks Luke in the nepotism episode, and then Dwight gets up and like spanks Andy or something like that.
Yeah.
Really rough.
But I love the intuition from Rainn.
Dwight loves to take it too far.
I love the intuition from Rainn Wilson to kind of take that upon himself to get up to also go to kiss Oscar. And everybody's like, okay, Dwight, settle down.
Oh gosh. Well, it's a great episode to kick off the season. The next episode. Oh, I should say we also get to see Jim's life in Stanford in this episode.
Let's talk about Stanford for a sec. I feel like that covers a few episodes. Because I don't know, there's 25 episodes this season, or no, 25. There's some doubles. Yeah,
yeah.
Ten and 11 is
the
one
hour long, and the 40 24 minute
and 25. The job is one.
Yeah.
So I feel like if we can do it in chunks, I feel like
I think major beats or themes or plot points, and I think Jim in Stanford is a big one.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, kind of through season 2, what we kind of see from Jim and from the show is that Jim is kind of portrayed as someone who's ready for kind of bigger and better things, right? That Jim perhaps has outgrown the role that he has in Scranton, kind of as subservient to Michael and to a lesser extent Dwight, right? Because Dwight's the number two, right? And Jim is someone who seems to be marked for, you know, a bigger thing.
Right.
And in Stanford, we kind of see that opportunity, right? We get to see that kind of play.
Yes, but it's also this weird kind of like mirrored reality of Dunder Mifflin Scranton, because you got Andy, who seems to be like a different version of Dwight, and you've got Karen, who's, you know,
opposite of Dwight, you could say. Josh is the opposite of Michael.
His new love, his new somebody he's interested in, just like he was with Pam. Right.
But I mean, mirror. I'm talking like straight mirrors almost. Like, like Josh Porter and Michael Scott couldn't
be more different. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Andy and Dwight couldn't be more different.
Right, right, right.
And if you think of the activities that Michael always makes them do and Noah's interested in, compared to them all playing Call of Duty, which they're all actually kind of pretty into.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, by the way the office is set up has always bugged me. Like, the way that all the salespeople, you see Karen, Jim, and Andy.
Just back to back to back. Like,
back to back to back.
They can all see.
Everyone can see what
Jim is doing.
or Andy, whoever's at the front.
Jim
Andy's
is at the front. Andy's behind him.
No, because Andy, Jim, Karen. right? I believe.
Karen is at the back. The only reason I say this is because she doesn't take the shot.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, now I'm...
And Jim turns around
to
Karen. Right. Anyway, it's just always bugged me that like everyone can see what Andy's doing. And then like, it's just very... it's a weird setup.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, Jim does put Andy's stuff in Jell-O just like he does with Dwight, but Andy's reaction freaks him out.
Right. We see that kind of angry Andy side, and we see the beginning of Andy, and I think... It's important to kind of mark season three as kind of this beginning point of Andy's character because, and I know we'll do a deeper dive into Andy later on, but like Andy's character changes so much and is so sort of pliable to what the story needs that like, and like what the story needs in season three is for someone who feels like Dwight, but is a little more severe in a weird way. Yeah, exactly. Like someone who's like even less predictable than Dwight, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think one of the funny things about the Jim and Dwight sort of pranking thing that goes on is that Jim can kind of anticipate Dwight's reactions in a way. And with Andy, it's like, well, I have no idea what he's going to do. You know? Yeah.
I feel like there's this weird thing where like Jim wants to be in Stanford, but I don't think he really likes it. He doesn't like pranking Andy like he loves pranking Dwight. He doesn't really like Karen as much as he loves Pam. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like Karen's not challenging to him because she's available and actually interested in him. And you know what I'm saying? She's the one who's after him a little bit more. He doesn't like... playing Battlefield or whatever.
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty. Yeah,
he doesn't. He almost would prefer to sit through one of Michael's stupid conference rooms. Don't you think?
I hear what you're saying.
It's a bit of a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, he's Jim and Stanford. I mean, he and Pam are such a sort of portrayed as a sort of ideal couple in this sort of perfect match. And him and Karen, while they are compatible, right, while they do get together, are maybe portrayed as a little less than perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Even though Jim plays his sort of endearing, sort of lovable moves, right?
Yeah.
And Karen is interested in him. I agree that getting into that relationship is less of a challenge, but they do seem okay for each other, even if they're not, you know.
And let's not forget, too, that Jim is probably still in the emotional wake of
putting
all his cards on the table for Pam and being like, here it is. Yes or no, and she says no, and he's like, all right, I'm out of here then.
Yeah.
So he's still in a place. He's like, I'm not doing this again.
Focus on work.
Yeah.
As Jim said, I put it all on the line for Pam, insert half smile, twice. She rejected me. But let's keep moving through the season.
All right. Well,
just to go now, during all that, what's happening back home in Scranton is, of course, the coup... the sort of rumblings of Jan leaving or Michael going to corporate, Dwight wanting to move into Michael's position.
I think, too, just like right before that, we have the convention where Jim and Dwight and Josh and Michael are all at the convention together, right? And we get to see sort of Michael's he's so excited to be at this, like, you know, he calls it like a booze-filled sex romp or something like that, right?
Yes, he does.
Swag. And he's like, it's the Mid-Northeastern Regional Office Supply Convention, right?
Yeah.
And I think what we get to see is Michael and Jim kind of hash out, you know, why Jim left, because Michael seems to take it so personally.
He says, you're a great boss.
Yeah, you were a great boss, exactly. Yeah. Michael has that party in his room, right?
That no one comes to.
Funny thing that I noticed in the convention is that there's a guy who comes to and he's like, hey, is this room 308 or whatever? And Michael's like, yep, here it is, Party Central. And he's like, I thought there was a party here. There's no one else in the room. Michael's like, come on in, you're the first one. And the guy's like, oh, okay, I think I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
It's Stevie from Eastbound and Down.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. And then the other thing we see here in this episode is Pam going on a blind date, right? Trying to re-enter the dating pool. And I think what we see in these episodes that you've listed, the convention, the coup, grief counseling, kind of just to keep moving through the season, is that we see Pam kind of on her own in a way.
Yeah.
You know, Pam in grief counseling kind of has to console Michael sort of by, you know, herself, right? Like she doesn't have the sort of ally friend in Jim to kind of get through these sort of bad days. You see moments where there's something funny that happens in the office and Pam looks to Ryan. Because, I mean, it's a psychological thing, right? When it's like there's something funny that happens, you look at the person who you feel most close to. And she looks to Ryan. Ryan's like, what?
Yeah.
You know?
He's such a dick.
Well, he's just sitting where Jim used to sit.
Right. Yeah. And like, so he doesn't have that same connection to Pam, right? So Pam has to kind of like deal with that or live in that, you know?
Yeah. It is funny that she keeps going with it and gets some enjoyment out of that. I mean, maybe she's bonding with the film crew at this point or something like that. Who knows? But yeah, they have the funeral for the bird.
Right.
There's some sweet moments there with her.
Maybe he died alone, but that doesn't mean he wasn't loved. Right. Yeah. I think that's a moment where Pam is speaking directly to Michael.
Mm-hmm.
His kappa was detached from his head.
What's the part where she makes Dwight run around the building and times him with a thermometer?
I believe that's the cold open for the merger.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I think Toby comes in and has run a race. And it's like, what's your mile? Or what was your pace? And Toby gives a number. Yeah. It's like 8-minute miles or something like that. And Dwight's like, yeah, I can do that in the car or something like that. So Pam begins to time him running around the building. Yeah. And she's like, I don't know why I'm doing this. This isn't even a stopwatch. This is a thermometer.
Yeah. She's like, keep going. Mm-hmm. I got to get back to work. I mean, there's some other great moments before the merger. Diwali's a fantastic episode. I mean,
I think what we see... You know, we've talked about how in the early seasons, Ryan is kind of set up as a main character. Part of that is kind of an inheritance from the BBC office. Part of that is them bringing on BJ Novak as kind of this up-and-coming sort of writer, comedian, star. And I do think we get some Ryan moments in the first few episodes. I'm thinking of Initiation, where Dwight takes him out to be, you know, like a new salesman, right? And he takes him to the... He takes him out to the beet farm. And now you have to vanquish fear, you know?
That feels so much earlier to me. Or you don't, I feel like that's an episode that I always think is later in the show.
Where Dwight takes Ryan out to for the sales thing?
Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe just because they go to shoot farms and and you start to
explore
these other places later in the show. Mm-hmm.
Ryan, just get in the coffin.
Please.
Where are the animals?
That's a great introduction to Dwight's life. They really, and they expand Dwight's character so, so is intentionally
that,
in
is
that,
that
episode.
The introduction of Moe's? Is that the first time we meet Moe's?
I think it's the first time we see
Moe's. He might have mentioned him before.
He mentioned him before.
Definitely. But I think that's the first real time we meet him.
Moe's is like, he seemed nice.
To fight fear.
After Diwali is an important episode, branch closing.
Before we get there, I just want to say really quick, I'm sorry.
Hang on.
Diwali is another important, I think Diwali is one of my favorite episodes from the season.
Oh, okay.
And it's just such a funny moment. It's where Michael and Carol break up. Mm-hmm. It's where we see Ryan and Kelly sort of at this moment where Ryan meets with Kelly's parents and stuff. Mm-hmm. And again, just talk about Ryan moments, this is a moment where Ryan seems to kind of diverge from Kelly a little bit. And you kind of see that he's trying to save up to travel and buy an Xbox or whatever, right? And then we see Pam, she's texting Jim and then nothing really happens, right? You again kind of see this thing where Pam is kind of alone, right?
Yeah.
She's kind of alone in the story to some extent.
Right.
But let's move to branch closing because I think that's a major plot point in the season.
Major plot point. Jan, at the start of this episode, tells Michael she doesn't seem, she seems thrilled to tell Michael that Scram Branch is closing.
Yeah, she has no, she's not sentimental.
She just gets right to it.
the term absorb, being absorbed, is very robotic and very non-feeling, which Michael doesn't like.
Am I a small number person or am I a severance package person?
She's like,
we're still figuring it out, but you're a severance package person.
Oh, God.
Don't do this to me, Jan. After all we've been through,
Jan.
I bought you jade earrings.
I know I hurt you.
Yeah, don't hurt me like I hurt you.
Don't hurt me.
But then, Michael is supposed to sit on this information, and he can't. You know, he's out there in the office. He's like, enjoy your work. Oh, you still can. You know, he's saying really ominous
there,
things like that.
Try and put on a brave face. We are screwed.
Show me that farm.
And then Toby comes through because he also knows.
Right.
But Michael, is really upset.
He's so pissed.
Yeah,
Toby.
Yeah, for betraying the office or whatever. So in a last ditch effort to save the branch, he and Dwight drive to David Wallace's house, right?
Yes.
And Dwight has David Wallace's address. He's like, why do you have that? He's a Christmas card list. He's like, have you ever met him? He goes, no, but when I do, I have something to talk about.
Meanwhile, at the Stamford branch, everyone is learning that they're going to absorb the Scranton branch. Josh will be the new
head of Dunder Mifflin Northeast.
That's right.
Andy Jim is leading, Andy is leading the chant, Stamford, Connecticut.
Yeah, like it's a pep rally or something like that.
And Jim is trying to get information about who's going to be transferred, right?
Yeah.
And Josh is very noncommittal.
Right.
He's like, I wouldn't worry about it, Jim.
He doesn't like the chanting that's happening. He says, everyone chill out.
Mm-hmm.
The first of many times, Stanley is delighted that the prospect he might be done working there.
I'm going to take my severance package. I'm going to retire. Yeah.
Have you guys ever worked at a place that closed? Like you didn't leave or get fired or anything, but the place just closed?
Every job I have ends after 2
but
months.
But you all know it's ending when you start.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
you all know it. Okay.
No, like, I'm never.
Andy Bernard, my summer at Enron, my internship at Bear Stearns.
Never.
No, I don't think so. Have you?
I did. I worked at a company that went under, and it was like, all right. The feeling is very, very weird of knowing that everything you're doing now is all for naught. And it's like,
wow, yeah.
Well, run through the base, guys. Just finish it out. It's like
you're like Ryan digitizing the Rolodex.
Yeah, it's this immediate just feeling of it's like senioritis, but like in a way more darker way because you're not graduating. Yeah. You're just like, well, this is all over.
Yeah.
And you just have to make plans for your life. And so I don't know to see them do it in this episode, to see the characters like Stanley relaxes, other people freak out, and you get a sense of where everyone's at in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, we learn Josh tells Jan that he has accepted a senior management position at Staples.
Yeah. And damn it, Josh. This whole plan was centered around keeping you. And then it cuts
say
to
what
Jan.
You want about Michael Scott. He would not do that.
Yeah, it's very true. Company man.
I don't think he'd get that senior management job at Staples, but...
Right.
So the tables have turned. Michael and Dwight have saved the day.
Right, they're
standing outside of David Wallace's
house.
Does that
mean Dwight works
no
for Josh later on? I wish they should have had Josh. Well, they should have had Josh show up. Like,
yeah,
they should have found a way to do
Dwight.
That.
Yeah. Dwight. They met at the convention.
Like, yeah, like he's visiting the store.
That's there's that funny. Moment yeah. where they're. I mean, I love when they're outside of David Wallace's house and they're both wearing those long coats and they do the role play.
Yes,
where Dwight, where Dwight is David Wallace and he's like, Scott, listen, it's just dollars and cents. It's a business and it's a dying business. And Michael's like, okay, start over. He's gonna be more intimidated than that.
Really, right. Really gets Michael.
In the second take, Dwight's like, whoa, what is the meaning of this?
You know. But that's actually a great scene because you see it's a very good illustration of like Dwight's actually a very smart guy.
Yeah,
he understands. He's not oblivious. He's loyal and that's it.
Yeah.
And you really see that in that scene.
Really? Have you ever heard of paper?
Yeah.
That's what he says when at Staples when that other saleswoman doesn't know what Dunder Mifflin is.
I don't like him, his beady little eyes.
I love his just a great bit of physical comedy from Ray Wilson when he swigs the Gatorade and hands it to Michael. He's like, replenish your fluids. The way he says God. That.
Just sitting on
and he
porch.
Gets the text message and he goes, we're not close. Stanford is closed. Right? They're like, we did it. And they all cheer and then they go, what do we do? And he's like, I don't know.
It's a great moment.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Followed by...
mirroring their trip to New York.
Mm-hmm. Next, we get the merger, which is this... spectacular episode where we get to see Andy Bernard and Michael Scott.
Worlds collide.
Yeah, the branches come together.
Yeah. Worlds collide. Jim and Karen now together. Back at Scranton. Pam is single.
Karen Filippelli. Italian. Possibly Filipina.
Oh my goodness.
Right. You're exotic looking. Was your dad a GI?
Oh my God.
That is... Oh man. Oh God.
I'll be the number two in this office in under 6 months. How? Personality mirroring, name repetition, and never breaking off a handshake. Right?
That's it pays off right away.
He's like, hello, Michael. Thank you for these nifty gifties. Nifty gifties. They are nifty, right? Yeah.
He's like the Andy Bernard guy.
Yeah. He's got a good sense about him, right?
Yeah. And then it's a whole slew of episodes that kind of plays with these people all coming together.
Yeah.
And I think, too, like what we kind of see, we kind of see is in the merger, them, like all the people that come from Stanford, they initially kind of get whittled down, right?
Right.
Tony, because he can't get on the table, and one of the more awkward scenes in the whole show.
Oh, yeah.
It's tough.
He quits right there. You know, we get to see Lazy Scranton, right?
Oh, wow.
Which is a real moment in time, right?
Yes.
Standing my what is it? Standing in the morning with a plate of grilled bacon. Call my man Dwight just to see what's shaking. Yeah.
Right. The Electric City.
So didn't you think the Electric City? They call it that because of the electricity.
That's so good.
Didn't you think Lazy Scranton was funny? No. Was it supposed to be funny?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, but yeah, Hannah, no one gets along with Hannah. She sticks around for a little bit.
She quits off screen.
Right.
Yeah, Martin, who is the convict.
Correct. Next episode. Participated in Insider
I was surprised
training.
To see written by Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant. Mm-hmm.
That's
the
right.
Convict.
Yep.
I was surprised. They dipped back in.
We get to see Prison Mike, one of the most memorable characters and moments in the whole show.
So good.
The nameplate of our logo.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
We're not the nameplate. What's the masthead?
Yeah.
There we go.
I had Martin explain to me what he went to prison for because it sounds a lot like what I do here every day.
It's a good Kevin.
Thank you.
Your Kevin's getting great.
Where
it used to be shit, but now it's so good.
I've been working on it every day.
That's so racist. Why? You think he's black? He is black. Yeah. And then the way where Dwight tries to like trap him into doing another crime by walking behind him with like a back pocket full of dollar bills.
Oh my god. He leans down. It's just
god.
You name me a white person that you trust, and I will name you a black person that I trust. Pam, my dad. He goes, Apollo Creed.
Apollo Creed. Stanley hated that answer.
Do you really expect us to believe you're a different person? Do you really expect me to not push you up against the wall, biatch?
Whoa, Michael. Hey.
It's how we talk in the clink.
You would be the bell of the ball. Don't drop the soap.
All right, Michael. Hey. That's just the way we talk in the clink.
Because you got a good life.
You got a good life. Yeah. I should have that as a drop. You have a good life.
I'm going to scare you straight.
That's pretty good.
Moving forward to a Benihana Christmas. The second annual Christmas episode, which is established as kind of the seminal recurring
tradition
moment
of the Christmas episode.
Just like life, Christmas.
No, not Harry Potter.
Sorry. I knew I had one more in there.
Just like life, Christmas is an important occasion every year.
Directed by the great Harold Ramis.
Hey, shout out.
Of Ghostbusters and many other things.
Orange County.
This is... at the start of this episode, Michael is going to invite Carol to Jamaica. But he photoshopped his face onto a picture of Carol and her ex-husband and their children at a ski trip.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. And...
it's a bold move to do that. Am I using the right word? Bold?
Bold.
Yeah.
She dumps him.
Maybe you can get over your concerns in Jamaica's largest freshwater pool. Yeah. And Michael is crestfallen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Andy tries to cheer him up by taking him to Benihana.
To paradise. Back your bags. We're leaving day after tomorrow. Andy says, we got to go cheer you up. We're taking you to Benihana. They filmed this in a real Benihana.
Asian Hooters.
The Asian Hooters.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. They did film this in a real Benihana. They flirt with their waitress and then show up with two different waitresses.
The actresses.
Which is something that I'm always had trouble with. I think
not good.
Some scene got cut or something. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
And
then back in the office, there's a separate Christmas party that is planned. The Angela and the party planning committee are planning a Nutcracker Christmas.
Yes.
And then Pam and Karen form the committee to plan parties.
Well, it opens with this great moment where they're all party planning together, and they've invited Karen into the party planning committee. And Karen's got all these ideas like karaoke and blah,
what do you think would be something from the Stanford branch that would make the Stanford people feel more welcome?
Yeah.
How about karaoke? Angela's like, no. Christmas drinking game. And Angela says, you know, you gave this a try, but clearly this isn't a fit. And
it's not for you.
Karen's like, are you serious? And everyone just kind of looks down and kind of demurs.
Everyone's afraid of Angela.
Yeah. So then Karen kind of, Pam sort of makes this gesture to Karen. It's like, you know, that's really terrible what Angela did.
Yeah.
And Karen's like, oh, man, thank you. And then you see this kind of weird moment where Jim watches Pam and Karen kind of as friends, you know?
Yep.
And then they, again, form that separate Christmas party.
Right.
Margarita karaoke Christmas.
That's right. The competing Christmas parties.
Double fudge brownies, Angela.
Get some good stuff. Well, and can we go after that, the Back from Vacation?
Yeah.
Because I feel like some big stuff goes on there, or at least for Pam's storyline. Like, that's one of the hardest times I feel like Pam has in this show is that episode.
Oh, yeah.
One of the few, I'm so sorry, before we go past Benny out of Christmas, a moment that I wanted to call out is just Dwight and Angela. Because Dwight has a really hard time at the Benihana, and Angela has a really hard time at the in the office. And when they kind of get together at the end of the episode, like, Angela says to Dwight, like, I had the worst day here, you know? Mm-hmm. And we see them kind of get together in a way. They're always kind of hiding. They're always off in secret. And just to have that moment between the two of them, like, it's a very nice moment for their, for their character arc and their relationship.
Oh, but that's so sweet. Yeah. That's really beautiful, because it is, they are these very, like, stubborn, lone wolf type characters in the office, but they need
they like make these gestures where they're like trying to hide from the other characters, that's a moment where they're kind of together. But let's move forward to Back from Vacation.
Well, okay, and then
Michael returns from Sandals,
right, who he's gone to with Jan.
That's not Jan, it's a German woman named Urkelgrew.
Urkelgrew.
Yeah.
Well, I know I only want to bring this episode up just because of in Pam's storyline. Like, I rewatched this one recently, and you know, we've talked about Jim and Pam. Are they good people? Do they make fun of people too much? Hmm. Are they too smart for their own good with these other people? But, like, this episode is just really, really hard for Pam, because she helps kind of the argument between Jim and Karen over moving the apartments and that kind of whole silly thing. And Pam kind of helps with that situation at the complete expense of her feelings and the complete expense of everything she feels about Jim. Yeah. And she cries at the end of this episode. And it's like, it's really, really touching. Yeah. It's kind of like...
She must be PMSing really bad.
Dwight comes in.
Another sweet moment between Pam and Dwight.
Yeah, it's just a real moment for Pam.
Think if we're establishing what this episode kind of means in the context of the characters, like, what this means is Michael and Jan getting together, right? Mm-hmm. And Michael bungling it kind of immediately, right?
Yeah.
And then as kind of another moment is Jim and being very hesitant to commit to Karen, right? And Pam kind of is, like, to your point, becomes kind of the intermediary, kind of help that. But then, like, the Jim and Pam sort of dynamic in the early seasons is a lot more nuanced, I think, than Will They, Won't They? Because it's not like they're both single. And a lot of times Will They, Won't They is like, oh, these people are the opposite, and then they get together, right?
Mm.
And, you know, I think what we see is two people who clearly, like, have an affinity and an attraction and a connection, but there's always kind of something in their way. The timing is really wrong, right?
Yeah.
As Jim himself says in season six, you know, it's to waiting, right?
Right.
And so, again, it's such an awkward thing to try to navigate, right? Like, what are any of them supposed to do, right? And so Pam, you know, trying to help her friend, but, like, realizing the kind of emotional hurt that this causes her, right? She, you know, again, removes herself from the scene and begins to cry, even though Karen is like, thank you so much for talking some sense into Halbert, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's such an interesting moment, kind of a complicated moment, right? It's like, there's a lot of feeling and a lot of emotional weight to that moment, but, like, how else do you process that, right? And Pam just kind of lets it out. And then Dwight, in a classic Office moment where there's a very emotional moment and then somebody comes through and pops the balloon, right?
Yeah, right.
Dwight gives her
as it should be
his handkerchief, and he sits next to her and he puts his arm around her and he says, so you're PMSing really bad, huh?
It just totally botches
right.
I think that's sweet too. I mean, it's Pam trying to be a good person. Like, she thinks, you know, she feels some guilt probably about still liking Jim, and, you know, I mean, what a complicated situation, and what a tough position to be in. And I think she really did do the right thing, and she tried to, and I it's one of the moments where I really, really like, feel for Pam, because I think there's those first couple of seasons, you are kind of just like, dude, break up with Roy. Like, what are you doing? You know, but, like, this is really a time where it's like, man, I feel for her. After this, we got Traveling Salesman.
Salesman slash The Return. And the reason I say this is because on the DVD, they're put together as one episode.
They are they are written by the same people. Yeah, they are. They're written by the same people, and they're both directed by Greg Daniels.
So basically, people in the office get paired off to go make cold calls, and then Oscar makes his return from his 3-month paid vacation.
Right.
Gil and I are going to Europe. Kids, sometimes it pays to be gay.
This season, there are so many returns.
Yeah.
There's Oscar. There's Jim.
The prodigal...
There's Michael.
My son returns.
Back from vacation.
Right. Like,
there's just a lot of that going on.
There's also Michael thinks that he's going to get the job at corporate and then returns.
Michael
people
returns.
Coming and going. That's the theme of this. Yeah,
Michael returns and Pam is like, we didn't do inventory. And he's like, why? And he's like, I specifically took my vacation so that we could... So that I could skip it.
Yeah.
He's like, in the islands, they don't care about this kind of thing. And he goes, why do you think so many businesses moved to the Caymans?
At the end of the return, Jim pranks Andy by hiding his cell phone in the ceiling, prompting Andy to punch a hole in the wall. And he goes away to anger management.
Rocks in the treetops.
Some
possibly
people
never to be seen again. I don't think
that's funny.
Yeah, I think, you know, the character of Andy initially was kind of written in to be written out, and I think anger management was supposed to be his exit. But Andy was such a popular character that they brought him back in.
Yeah.
And I think, again, to highlight a relationship moment, when it comes to pairing up the characters, we get to see Jim and Andy together, and we get to see Andy get a little bit more shine. Mm-hmm. Hear me that disc, you know, mm-hmm. right? And then Andy dating that high school girl.
Gets a laugh. Like,
jeez, yeah. And then, but what we see is Karen and Phyllis together, and... Phyllis says to Karen after the book get makeovers, you know, I'm so glad you're with Jim. You know, after the thing with Pam, you know, I thought he'd never get over her, right? So kind of she, yeah, Phyllis right. kind of floats that thing to Karen,
Phyllis,
and Karen has to have
Phyllis.
That talk. Damn it, Phyllis. I'm sorry. Damn it,
damn
Phyllis.
It, Phyllis.
Yeah. But yeah, Karen has to kind of have this conversation with Jim about Pam, right? And I think that's kind of this recurring theme is that Karen consistently tries to have these serious talks with Jim about their relationship, and Jim is super resistant to it.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's
because
he doesn't
it happens
really
all the time.
Like her that much.
Right.
The
and then another thing I think yeah. I'm so sorry is that like Dwight resigns right because he drives the receipts up to corporate to
wow.
save Angela right and Andy comes in as the saboteur right
saboteur
loompa dupity dossum. Dwight is now gone, which is totally awesome. What do you mean? He was such a nice guy. No, he was not.
He was a total douche. Doobity doo.
I forgot the second part even happened.
Meanwhile, Angela is leering through the blinds.
Yeah.
Yes.
But again, this is a moment where Dwight... His character is tested.
Her future fiance.
Right. Yeah. And Noelle is like, meanwhile, there's this woman who, let's call her Noelle, right? She was in a desperate Noelle. Bind, and this gallant gentleman, let's call him Kurt, right? Came through and saved the day, right? And Dwight says, why don't I just get up and declare our love? You know, we'll be just like Ryan and Kelly. And Angela says, those are the people I hate most in the whole world.
That's right.
But anyway, it's just to set up this plot moment, right? And I think something that we see in season three is Dwight's sort of separation from Michael. I think we see it in the coup. I think we see it here. I think we see it in the job, right?
But Dwight shout out to the pancake eating scene in the coup. One of my favorites.
It's all for me. Leave it all. It's all on the table.
The branch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But just like we see them separate... in the return, we also see Michael. Angela explains to Michael what happened.
Dwight loves this company.
Yeah. I do love that moment, too, where, you know, like the plants are dying in the office and Michael realizes that his toys aren't arranged in a creative way every morning. And it's just like Dwight does all this random stuff after work.
One of the all-time great bits of camera humor in the office is when Dwight comes back wearing the Shrewd Farms Beat sweater and he looks into the conference room at the party and he goes, you did all this for me? And the camera turns to the banner that says, welcome back, Oscar. And then Dwight goes to the pinata and like they go to give him a blindfold. He goes, no, I don't need it. He just destroys the pinata.
I don't need it.
Skip, skip. Yeah.
But that is a sweet moment when Michael goes to Staples to ask him back.
Yeah.
And then they just walk right out. Right. He quits right there on the spot. Something I've always wanted to do.
Interesting.
There's a string of fantastic episodes after this. I don't know if there's a lot of big story points in Ben
We've
Franklin,
talked about Phyllis's
wedding, business school.
They're all great.
Is a fantastic episode.
They're all great. Cocktails. It's a cocktails. Things.
I think cocktails is one to zero in on a little bit.
Okay.
Like if you want to gloss over some of the others for the sake of
we're
getting through
to.
This episode,
let's
right?
talk about cocktails. Talk directed about cocktails. By J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
Written by Toby.
Basically, what we see is we see Michael and Jan kind of officially sort of declare their love through the love contract, right? And we see them kind of portray that to David Wallace, right? We see Jim kind of endear himself to David Wallace, right? Mm-hmm. And as David Wallace says, "What's up with Jan and Michael?" And Jim goes, where to begin, right?
So
they kind of make that connection.
I don't know where to begin.
The Jim and David Wallace connection sort of bears fruit in season six when Jim becomes co-manager, right? And then back in Scranton, what we see is Pam kind of come clean to Roy about the fact that she kissed Jim, right? Mm-hmm. And they all get together at Poor Richard's, right? And as Robert California would say, in vino veritas, right?
Indeed.
And I'm not going to stop trusting my drunken self now. and Pam kind of, or Pam makes that confession to Roy, and Roy gets really upset.
Yeah. And that's right. We did kind of gloss over that Pam and Roy are kind of connected.
Pam and Roy are back together, you know, in Phyllis's wedding. They get back together in a way that's really sad. And in the,
even
you know,
after you're gone.
She sees, Pam sees Jim and Karen kind of have these sweet moments together. And then, you know, Pam and Roy kind of get together sort of in that, that sort of wedding moment, right? Like they kind of get together again.
Yeah.
And it's difficult because Jim sees them leave together as well.
That is really interesting, too, that their song is...
Jewel?
Yeah, that song is all about a breakup and waiting for that person to come back.
Jim has a very similar like physical affect that he does on the Booze Cruise, I feel like, in this part. Like, he has a really similar feeling like where he's totally dejected with Katie on the Booze Cruise. I'm just like,
no, let's break up.
I think I'm done. And he has the same feeling with Karen in this episode, for sure. Mm.
Here's what happens. I'm with Karen. Brangelina is with Frangelina. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he just is like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's all done.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Well, I'm going to Stanford.
Yeah, it's like oh, this all looks good on paper, so we're done.
Mm-hmm.
But back to cocktails.
Bummer. Yeah.
And then this sets up Roy going after Jim. That's kind of the last beat of this episode.
Yeah.
After this episode where Roy says to no one in particular, I'm going to kill Jim Halpert, right? So moving into the negotiation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Roy comes in to attack Jim and Dwight pepper sprays him, neutralizing him, right?
Amazing.
And in this moment where Dwight stands up for Jim and it becomes a moment, just like a unique moment in the Jim-Dwight sort of relationship.
Angela is just loving it.
Yeah. She wants to hear everybody's...
She's getting off to it.
She wants to hear everybody's recounts.
She takes home. Toby gives her all the the whole
guy,
file of everyone's
story.
The big
guy walks in with a sock full of nickels.
Yeah, Creed is like, I want to say it was really late, like 11 p.m. at night.
Then right? Fruit comes in with a can of hairspray and a lighter.
Yeah. And Angela goes, you're useless, right? And then Oscar's like, Dwight stands there like an action hero, right? But yeah, in the negotiation,
she's
this,
like,
wow.
This prompts Daryl to come in and ask for more money, which leads to the revelation that Michael is wearing a women's suit. And then they drive to, he's like,
and it is mysterious because the buttons are on the wrong side.
Right. Look at the shoulder pads. The pants have no pockets, right?
It's European cut.
Made by Mysterious. And it is Mysterious.
And he's like, in a negotiation, you can make a lot of mistakes. My mistake, I accidentally wore women's clothing. And then, you know, when he goes into the negotiation, right, eventually the negotiations break down and Jan is like, look, I can give you a 12% raise, but you have to ask for 15. Mm-hmm. She's like, what's going on with you? And he's like, I had the worst day. You know, first this Roy thing, and then I accidentally cross-dressed. And then Daryl thinks he's such a man, right? Like, that's a recurring thing. And then I come up here and you have this new boy toy, right? Hunter, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I wish you would let me know that you would hire James Vanderbeek. Right.
Oh, gosh.
Well, the last six episodes, it's hard to gloss over each one of them because, like, they're all so good. I mean, so much happens during the negotiation. Even in safety training, like, the relationship between the warehouse and Michael is such a funny relationship. Like, and they have it throughout the show. Like, one of the last things he does on Michael's final day is shooting
the basket
in the warehouse, you know, and it's one of the things we see in season one.
This idea that Michael has to kind of prove his manhood and his masculinity is kind of brought out in the safety training episode.
There's actually just so many genuinely sweet moments. I like at the end of the negotiation, Jan leveling with Michael and saying, you know, just recognizing that he's having a tough time and that she should give him the raise. Safety training when Daryl has to talk Michael down from actually jumping off of the roof. I mean, those moments I think are so important to this season. Going through it now with you guys right now, I'm just realizing how many of them there are.
Yeah.
where you really sympathize for the characters. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that as the show goes on, you start to get away from that a little bit.
I think in general, kind of the beauty of this show is that you have characters that, on one hand, you have a character like Michael or Dwight that is on the surface incredibly flawed and maybe ignorant or offensive or does these things that kind of harms other characters, right? But you still end up rooting for them because you see these sort of kernels of what they want and what they need and like what they're sort of what they're kind of going for and what they kind of are trying to get from the world. Right?
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that you see on the flip side of that is characters like Jim and Pam, who on the surface are very relatable, right? But also very flawed and very human, right?
That's a good point.
They very rarely are perfect, right? You think about the way that Jim and Pam sort of treat each other, right? The way that Jim treats Karen through the whole course of the season, the way that Pam, you know, feels this need to kind of step into Jim and Karen's relationship and kind of help them out. But at the same time, like that's to her own detriment to some extent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's like a really good thing that we see kind of borne out through the course of this season.
Well, and you mentioned like not only are these all these sort of Venn diagrams of all these characters, and they're sort of, it's season three, they're starting to sort of forge connections around each other where they don't all need to be directly related to the main characters in some way. Like, and then in the middle of that, there's injecting all of these like instances of power throughout this entire season. Like it starts that way. It starts with some posturing between like Andy and Dwight and these them coming together. There's the whole thing of Michael wanting to go to corporate. And then it ends, I mean, with Beach Game, the job. The entire time it's about like you sort of say this like power, kind of manhood for Michael the whole time. It just creates like this season's so good at creating these situations to develop the characters.
Yeah. And it's always just people not getting what they want.
Right. Right.
And
it's like the desires
and
of all
coming
the characters
to terms with that, trying to either console themselves or each other to say it's okay to not get what you want. And
yeah.
You have
oh, yeah.
to move on.
Right. In the safety training episode, Michael is on the roof of a building saying, what is there that's worthwhile in my life?
Right.
Yeah.
And the other characters have to convince him of that.
I hate
Daryl has to go, Jan, sweet, sweet, beautiful Jan. Yeah, right.
Things aren't good with Jan.
Right. Like this idea that, you know, Michael is really kind of, you know, and then he's like, I'll jump off the edge and then they'll all learn their lesson. And then maybe they think, oh, maybe I should have been nicer to Michael. Right.
I'll take a few more bounces.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I mean, and that kind of theme continues, I think, through, I mean, like, in, I mean, product Women's Appreciation, we've talked about these episodes before. Like, we talked about Women's Appreciation
a
lot,
during the
I
Michael and
before.
Jan thing.
Yeah, that's another one of, like, Michael's masculinity is completely on trial throughout that entire episode.
Jan has this schoolgirl fantasy. Oh, that's a pretty common one. I just, I have a hard time wearing the dress.
Yeah. Again, them consoling him. Except, actually, this time, them being like, you don't have to accept this, you can end it right now.
Yeah.
And then he does it so badly.
Yeah.
Calls and leaves the voicemail. They're all just like, no, no.
It's the worst possible way.
All right.
I think kind of to wrap this up, wrap up the season, like the kind of, for me, the signature moment of season three is always Beach Games.
Yeah,
that is like
for
the standout episode of season three.
100%.
It is the most singular, I think, episode of this season. It feels the most unique, right?
You almost could call it a bottle episode.
Right.
It's
ship in a bottle episode.
It's funny how much that one episode addresses everything we just talked about too. Because like we talked about this whole season having could probably exist on its own. Like you could just, if The Office was one season, this is probably the one I would want to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that's what like Beach Games is, people confronting all of these things, and it's like it's the second to last episode, which is always like such an exciting episode for big shows where it's like it sets up the final spike of whatever it's going to be, which means, you know, Pam has that whole, after she's doing the firewalk, she does the talk.
Right.
You get all these characters like, hey, what if we took all these times where people are sort of surreptitiously trying to gain power and we just literally have them play games for it?
Yeah.
Like,
and it's like,
do you really expect us to believe you're making this decision on this basis?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, stand like in the sumo costumes, Andy floating away. On
Remember to always wear the safety mittens.
I must have left them in my car.
I have to call out maybe the greatest physical comedy moment on the show, which is Andy going to drop the napkin in the water and falling into the lake.
Why is he doing that?
The ratio of his size compared to the
task,
like how tiny that napkin is.
Yeah.
And then the fact that he like slowly shuffles down that rock. Like, it's so perfect.
I also, speaking of that, I think I sent you guys a meme.
I love it. I love it so much. I know exactly
what that was. Yeah. It's a photo of Pam and what's his name? Brian?
Brian.
The sound guy from season 9.
Only knowing you a short while, Brian. That's not the same thing.
And then it says, above that, camera crew in season 9 when Pam gets upset. Then it's the picture of Andy out in the middle of the lake, and it says, camera crew when season 3, Andy is literally stuck in the middle of a lake.
His life is in danger.
Yeah.
There's that scene where, like, he's floated all the way to the edge of the lake, and there's a light like on him, headlight. And he goes, hello, my name is Andrew Bernard.
I'm with a group from Dunder Mifflin.
And the light just turns off.
Yeah, it's like...
Where is Andy? Andy's never here today. But again, like, I think what we see in Beach Games is sort of this kind of the end of what is sort of normalized things in the office. Michael is sort of the one in charge completely, right?
Yeah.
He is sort of dictating what's going on. Pam is very much marginalized, literally put on the sidelines, right? Yeah. Until she speaks up, right? Mm-hmm. Jim and Stanley and Andy and Dwight are all kind of competing, right, to be the next one in line, right? This is sort of a metaphor for what the first three seasons of the show are, right? Mm-hmm. And then as we go into season 4, we see Pam speak up and kind of break the mold a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. begin the pattern of kind of coming into her own. You see Jim and Dwight and Andy and Stanley, not so much, but like they kind of go their own ways, is trying to be more independent, right?
Yeah.
Jim vies for the corporate job, right? Eventually, yeah. Andy, or I mean, you see Dwight, you know, making plays for the branch, right? You see Andy eventually also asserts his own agency later on when he tries to become famous and when he is the branch manager, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think Beach Games is kind of this last moment where the show is kind of held together by these same sort of, mm-hmm. I don't know, dynamics, right? And then we begin to see the breakage of that in the next episode when Ryan goes to corporate, right?
Right.
And the whole show begins to change. So I think Beach Games is kind of this last sort of penultimate moment where mm-hmm. the show is a certain way.
Pam runs across the coals.
Yeah.
All then, alone, not even anyone watching.
Right. And Pam says, like, I feel really good right now. Like, I just have these things in my mind that I have to say.
Yep.
And earlier in the episode, she's like, I have the most boring job in the office. Why wouldn't I have the most boring job here? Right.
Yeah. I also got to say in this episode, too, seeing everyone sing together
bus. I love it.
Is one of those times. Like, I don't know if there's many other moments before this in the whole three seasons before this that you really see the whole office on the same page, like
that's a good point.
As this family that Michael has always imagined it to be, right?
Yeah. And what a great writing choice to mm-hmm. have this all happen out of the office.
Yeah,
like it's just such a good move
without Toby.
It's I don't know. It is fantastic.
That is sad that Toby's not there.
The night grew very quiet.
But I think that not only is it watching those characters come together, it's also that ensemble cast having really bonded and really, I just feel like you can feel their excitement as a cast about this show and about, like, just, I don't know, in that Flintstones mm-hmm. thing where everyone at the very end where everyone laughs at the
where Michael is like yeah, I love it.
I think that I just can feel that energy.
Yeah.
Let's
wrap it up.
Quick wrap up.
Finale.
Quick wrap up.
The Job.
Yeah.
I mean, The Job is kind of a really important episode. It's the first hour-long episode in the history of the show.
Ooh.
And I think what we see is these characters sort of moving on to this next stage, right? If Beach Games is the last moment where they're all at the same level, they're all kind of looking to push forward together, right?
Hmm.
Michael assumes that he's moving forward, and he gives Dwight the promotion prematurely, right? Jim gets a haircut. Is like taking himself a little more seriously, is going for the corporate job, right? Karen is also going for the corporate job, right? All of these characters are looking to make this next move. We don't see Ryan interview for the job at all, but he is the one who ends up getting it at the very end.
Sneaky.
And Jim has to kind of confront his past and his present and his future, right? While he's sitting there interviewing for the job, it seems to be going incredibly well. He's clearly endeared himself to David Wallace, right?
Loves Jim.
And what he sees from Pam is the Dundee or the Office Olympics medal, right? Mm. And the note that says, like, don't forget about us, right? Mm. And so Jim eventually decides to take himself out of consideration, right?
Wow.
And to go back into to Scranton and ask Pam on a date, right?
Yeah.
Of course, I mean, it's not without a downside.
And he leaves Karen in New York.
Yeah, crying in a fountain, right? Yeah. So it's not without, you know, it's not
which
like
we learn later.
Again, this idea that these characters on one hand are doing things that we see as kind of fulfilling character moments in their journey, but also like really flawed and not perfect and and kind of terrible, right? Like
yeah,
the way he treats
yeah,
Karen
yeah.
throughout the season.
It's
you know?
Not good.
Right. Mm. And just I'm thinking of when Michael is eating this lemon cake and he's like, not good. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
But again, we see this all kind of play out in a certain way. And Michael makes his return, to your point.
Right.
About
he does make Dwight the manager.
Right. And Dwight and Andy start painting
the
office
black.
Right.
Incredible.
And he's like, my first move, promote Andrew Bernard to my number two. And he's like, my first move, accept. He's like you had any course of option.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And going to when Jim has Pam on a date, I think like not only is that one of the best, just bet heartwarming moments in the entire show. I mean, it's this release of tension in a way. Like the kiss in Casino Night was a big release of tension. Yeah. And it's immediately like, we can't do this.
Yeah.
And Jim leaves.
Yeah.
And this is the time when you're like,
wait a minute.
Oh, my God.
This is actually going to happen now.
Yes. And I think this moment is meant to really, I think it's meant to pay a little bit of homage to the BBC office. Because like I was saying at the beginning, when like if you could just have this season be the entire show, what a perfect way to end with Jim knocking on the door, leaning in and asking Pam on a date, which is exactly how the BBC office kind of ends, is with Tim walking in and finally asking Dawn on a date. And she says yes. And that's the end.
And I think, too, I mean, for this moment, right, Pam is giving a talking head about, like, where she is in life and how she hopes for the best for Jim,
exactly.
right? And there's this moment where she's rationalizing. She's making the best of a situation.
She's, like, ready to move on.
Yeah, she's making the best of a situation that isn't perfect or ideal or exactly what she wants. And Jim comes in, and he breaks up a talking head by opening the door. And he asks her on the date, and she says yes. And then she says, I'm sorry, what was the question, right?
Yeah.
So it interrupts the whole dynamic of things happening, and Pam has to kind of react to what's going on.
Yeah.
Where, you know, all of a sudden, like, it's been totally interrupted. And
She says, I haven't heard anything, but I bet Jim got the job. I mean, why wouldn't he? He's totally qualified and smart, and everyone loves him. And even if he never comes back, that's okay. We're friends, and I'm sure we'll stay friends. We never got the timing right, you know? I shot him down. And then he did the same to me. But you know what? It's okay. I'm totally fine. Everything is going to be totally. And then, yeah.
And what we see from Jim is Jim kind of interrupting the flow, right? Where like Pam is with Roy and that's kind of the natural flow. And then Jim is with Karen and that's kind of the flow. And Jim finally sort of asserts himself.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, like I'm so, like, you know, I mean.
What a great cliffhanger.
Yeah, exactly. To kind of. Good. Take himself and be like, no, 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 this is what I want to do. Like, I want to go back to Scranton. I want to take Pam. Like, this is my life. And he's taking agency and he's kind of acting in that way. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Season 3.
Way to wrap up.
So good.
What a fantastic season.
As a concluding thought to the season, when I was watching it and thinking about it, like, we've talked, one of our early episodes is about the peak of The Office, right? When is The Office peak? We kind of agreed on season 4-ish, right? But
yeah.
And looking at this season, I actually kind of think
season
three is kind of the individual moment.
It's the perfect season.
It's not just in terms of what we see and what we like in the show, but like if you think about critical reception, you think about audience popularity, you think about viewership, right?
Oh, yeah. All these people are becoming stars.
Think it's a coincidence that this is a season where a lot of people jumped in on The Office and became really big fans. You know, I think season three is, you know, we talk about in later seasons how they had other characters and how you kind of miss that they don't have Aaron or Gabe or whomever it is in the earlier seasons. But like to some extent, like having less characters allows them to be a little more nimble, to focus in on certain plot dynamics, right? And like, what is The Office, right? Michael's well-meaning, enthusiastic, but often ignorant, offensive, and insensitive enthusiasm, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What is, you know, Dwight's confident and his kind of contentious nature and how kind of combative he is. And then Jim and Pam's romantic tension in spite of what are very realistic obstacles,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And we see all three of those things like play out tremendously.
100%.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. That was a lot of fun recapping that. How about we have a little conference room in 5 minutes?
All right. You know what? That's it. Conference room, 5 minutes.
Okay. So I have conference room this week and I wanted to share with you something that I found in doing my homework for this episode really quickly. And I know this is a visual cue that I'm giving you, but it's an auditory format.
Yes.
Do you guys know who this is? I'm showing them my laptop.
Oh, this is a woman who she is in seasons 1 and 2. And
I have no idea who that is.
She's just, okay, this is just some random lady who
looks
is
like
an
she's
extra.
Sitting in the conference room.
Yeah, she's a background actor and
we'll put this photo.
I'll stop you right there.
We'll put this photo in the post. In the post so you
her
can
name
see.
Is Luann. She has a name, right?
Okay.
When I was researching, you know, this episode, I was reading one of the Office recaps and the last line is Luann is visible working at her desk. And I was like, Luann? Who's Luann?
Right? Yeah.
If I miss this, in all my repeated viewings of The Office, have I missed one character? Does she have any lines? Does she have any? And the answer is no. She's just brought out. But she appears in several episodes.
Is she in season 3?
Seasons 1 through 3. So
what?
In these episodes, The Alliance in the background when Michael eats ice cream cake, Hot Girl in the background during Dwight's talking head, Office Olympics, observing several events, including Horace, The Fight, leaving the office at the end of the day.
What?
The Secret, cleaning her desk while Jim confesses his crush to Pam.
No.
The Carpet, talking to Kelly in the background. Drug testing, working at her desk when Dwight talks
what?
To the nurse.
No.
The Coup, working at the desk when
the
Dwight goes for Angela. Grief counseling, working at her desk
what?
When Michael comforts Kelly.
Where is her desk?
A Benihana Christmas.
No.
Working at her desk.
Shut your mouth.
When Toby feels Kevin's rope and back from vacation. Working at her desk when Pam enters the break room while Jim is
Where sleeping. Is her desk? What department does she work for?
I refuse to believe that is real.
Is she in the bullpen or is she in the...
She's in the annex. She's working alongside Toby.
She's
right?
in the annex.
Yeah. Okay, that picture looks familiar.
Yeah, I'm showing them a couple other screenshots from
these
different
episodes. Well, that's
from
season
episodes.
One. Wow. Season one, I get it. But you're telling me
season
she's in 2 and 3.
A lot of people.
Yeah,
who,
yeah.
You get out of here.
There's a
you get the
when,
hell
that
out of
moment
here.
Where they're all wearing robes, and you know how like they're one short robe, and
right,
Mike's
yeah,
like take it from Toby.
And
right,
Toby's like.
There's
so
a moment
soft.
Where he feels Kevin's robe yeah. in the break room. You can see her through the window, in the break room.
Dude,
yeah.
I'm
surprised that by season 3 they were still. Did she go to beach day?
No, she doesn't go to
hey,
beach day.
Hey, go to our Facebook because we'll post this.
Yeah,
and if I'm a little stunned right now.
I was in the same zone, right?
And I knew that there were other people in the office in season
but
1
but none
and
of
two.
Them have had names and none of them have had
we're into season
this
3
many repeated appearances,
yeah.
right?
Back from vacation.
And supposedly in a web chat, Greg Daniels identifies her as Luann, right?
Wow.
And Greg Daniels' kind of perspective was that it would be better to have characters that aren't named or aren't identified as part of this sort of office dynamic. But in general, it's just like when I went through and looked at this, I was like, there is a ghost in the machine.
You know? No kidding.
There's something that I've never noticed after
that's like
all these times
weird,
watching the show.
Like
yeah.
Berenstain Bears thing
right.
where people are like, no, she doesn't exist.
The
mandala, like, she was there the whole time.
The mandala effect is what that's called. Right.
There you
basically
go.
What Alex is talking about, if you ever read the Berenstain Bears as a kid, right? Like think about how that's spelled. But whenever you go to look at a Berenstain Bears book, it's spelled with an A-I-N at the end. The Berenstain Bears. It's crazy. It makes no sense
like,
at all.
No,
upsetting.
It's not.
All
no, it's
of this
not.
Is upsetting.
It feels like evidence of time travel is what
yeah.
it feels like. But anyway.
A glitch in the Matrix.
Luann, anyway. A glitch in the Matrix, Ghost in the Machine. Check all it
right.
out.
Luann.
Big stuff here on the Michael Scott Podcast Company. Let's do trivia.
Let's have some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
Woo! Today's trivia comes from season 3, episode 9.
Naturally.
Episode 9?
Season 3, episode 9.
The Merger.
Nope.
Benihana Christmas.
Nope.
Back from Vacation.
Nope.
I feel like I'm right in the zone.
Was we just looking
at this whole time. We referenced it several times this episode.
I'm not sure.
It is The Convict.
Oh, The Convict.
Oh, okay. The Convict. Okay.
Yes, The Convict. What is the cold open for this episode?
I couldn't tell you.
This is finding to be one of the harder trivia questions.
Is it when they get the call from Jim?
No.
Okay.
No. Michael does...
Is Dwight dressed as Jim?
No.
Other way around.
No.
Jim is dressed as
that's
Dwight.
Right. Michael does an impression. Michael gets under a desk during this cold.
Oh, oh. He's the baby.
I'm one of
May
those
I?
Babies from Look Who's Talking.
May I?
Yeah. I'm thirsty, Mom.
Yes. I wrote this question and forgot to write the exact answer, so
okay.
I'm going to move
okay.
on.
Okay.
There's, the question was... What is the specific program that Josh takes advantage of?
Oh, I mean,
when
it's
hiring
like
Martin.
The...
It's like a federal work program.
Yeah,
or something.
Exactly.
I meant to write the name. For some reason, I didn't. Okay.
Write to us and tell us what.
Print in all colors initiative.
Yeah. You said one of these, so let's get the other. But Michael references two black men he trusts even more than a white man. Who are the two?
I couldn't think of the other besides Apollo Creed.
It's Apollo Creed.
Barack Obama.
I bet you'll be able to get it. Think about who would Michael think of?
Tim Meadows or something like that.
No.
Tim Meadows was on the show.
No.
I don't know.
He is the father of a fellow NBC show star.
Does he say Martin Luther King Jr.?
No.
Does he say Donald Glover?
It's Danny Glover.
Danny Glover. Yes. Ah, yeah, okay.
Okay, what class does Martin take in prison? What class did he take?
Business classes.
No.
Finance classes.
No, he knew several people who took business classes that went on to do extraordinary things, but Martin himself took a...
Watercolors.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, he was a guest
to be like, sculpting. Yeah.
That was amazing because that was probably in your head somewhere.
I almost said finger painting. Yeah, yeah, that's...
That's in there. You've seen that episode enough. It's in there. And you recalled it. Mm-hmm. That's just incredible stuff. Okay.
This is good. This is very useful information all the time.
Yes. What was the main crime that prison Mike committed?
Oh,
the marquee crime. What specifically?
Stealing the president's rubies. Kidnapping the president's daughter.
Well, okay.
Oh, the president's son.
Yes, yes.
And he never got caught, neither.
And held him for ransom. Thank you.
Stealing the president's rubies is something from Parks and Rec with Burt Macklin.
Yes. But all the crimes are I stole, I robbed, and I kidnapped the president's son and held him for ransom.
And I never got caught,
neither. What was the
last time we had a presidential son?
What was the food? Barron Trump?
Yep.
Barron, okay.
Eric Trump. And Donald Trump Jr. I can't believe we went to Barron first. What's the food that Prison Mike had in prison?
Gruel sandwiches.
Gruel sandwiches? There's two others.
I don't know.
Gruel omelets.
Gruel omelets.
And you can eat your own hair. All right, last question.
Okay.
Last question. This is actually, I'll do in two questions. What's the B storyline in this episode?
And the convict?
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't know.
With Jim and Pam?
Is it Dwight and Andy?
Jim and Pam and Andy. It's between the three of them.
Oh, it's Andy is hitting on Pam.
Yes, correct. And
The moment where...
I'm so horny. Are you talking about that?
No. Oh, no. Where Andy's like talking to Jim about who he should set... Like, he should go after, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, what about Pam? And he looks over at Pam, and Pam looks up at him, which is like the sweetest, most innocent look.
I know.
And he goes, yes, that's who you should go after.
Yes. Right? I thought that was an absolutely moment, but he doesn't actually see that.
I lift a froth.
Yes. So what does Pam not like?
Oh.
So there's one, two.
Okay.
There's one,
Pig
two,
Latin.
Three. There's four.
Disc
things.
Golf. Falsetto singing.
Rainbow Connection. Banjo.
One. There's two more.
Wait. So what do we get? What do we get right?
So you got frisbee based competitions, which is not disc golf. It's frisbee based competitions.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Pig Latin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He just asks, can you sing in a high falsetto voice?
Okay.
And then there's And then there's two other specific things she says she doesn't like.
Playing guitar? Or playing an instrument?
Can you play an instrument? He can play banjo. But he mentions things she loves, which is things she hates.
Uh-huh.
There's two more.
Man, I don't know.
One is hunting. You're probably not going to get that one.
Okay, yeah.
And then the last one I feel like you could get. Because it's weird.
I don't know. Leaving her at a minor league hockey game.
No, those. No, it's the Six Flags ads.
Oh.
Real quick, did you say that Danny Glover was the father of Donald Glover?
Yes.
Just now? That's not true.
It's not true.
That is not true.
He talks about it in his stand-up how it's not true.
Oh.
It's a rumor. I just wanted to clear that up for
our
fans.
It's a rumor. They're not related at all.
They are not related at all.
Well, we'll see. All right.
His father is actually Crispin Glover. So,
guys, thank you so much for listening. You can check us out on Facebook. You can check us out on Twitter at Michael Scott Pod. We're on Instagram at Michael Scott Podcast Company. We have a phone number that you can call. That's 503-694-9314. You can leave us a message.
A bunch of voicemails. We're ready for a mailbag.
Yeah, we need to do a mailbag. Yeah.
We're going to do a mailbag next time.
So please go ahead, call that number, leave us comments, leave us questions, things you'd love to hear us talk about on the show. Go ahead. Post on our any of our social medias what the answer to Alex's unanswered question is.
Ask us questions in person. The
federal work program.
And tune in next week when we'll talk about something else.
Riddit do.
Thanks for listening, guys.
They call it Scranton.
What?
The Electric City. Scranton.
What?
The Electric City. Lazy Scranton, the Electric City. They call it that because of the electricity. The city's laid out from east to west, and our public parks and libraries are truly the best. Call poison control if you're bit by a spider.
But check that it's covered by your healthcare provider.
Plenty of space in the parking lot.
But the little cars go in the compact spot.
Spot.
Spot!
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 Spot! Snack attack time!
Don't lose your head!
We like Cucinas for the tasty bread! They call it Scranton!
What?
The Electric City!
Scranton! What?
The Electric City!
Scranton!
What?
The Electric City!
Scranton!
What?
The Electric City!
Scranton! What? Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.